Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome back to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed.
Obsessed!
I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And this week we're discussing Wes Craven. We're talking about two Wes Craven.
Two techno terrors from Wes Craven.
Yeah, two electricity-based horror movies from Wes Craven. This week we're talking about Shocker from 1989.
I'm ready to hear
sad
some
story.
I'm here to see some adjectives coming out of your mouth because it was so hard not to talk while we watched this movie.
Yeah,
it was the most excruciating movie watching experience of my life.
Yeah, if we were Mystery Science Theater, then this would have been episode number one.
This
sure.
would have been it.
Yeah, no, this movie is heartbreaking. We were robbed of another incredible horror franchise from...
What are you talking about?
From Wes Craven himself.
Oh my God.
You know, not unlike My Bloody Valentine, which if they had the uncut version in theaters, we'd have 10 more of those movies.
You can't bring My Bloody Valentine into this. That is a fucking pedestal. That is so high up. Shocker is like some digital fuzz down here.
Shocker is the problem with filmmaking. Now, filmmaking is, now Kim would agree with me, but for completely different reasons. The problem with filmmaking is that it is a collaborative medium. You know, like it's an art form that employs hundreds of people.
You're saying you needed somebody to tell Wes no sometimes.
No, I'm saying we needed 100 Wes Cravens on site. So that way it could have all gotten done.
More Wes's.
Yeah. This movie, it got an X rating 13 times before it got an R rating to go into the movie theater. Their fucking digital effects guy shit the bed. Like, just completely failed. They had to rescue this movie. Like, they had to rescue the negatives of this movie all across Hollywood to finish it in, like, a month before it came out in the movie theater kind of situation.
Wow.
And it was built and it designed, developed to be a franchise. This was supposed to be like Friday the 13th, like Final Destination,
like
a Nightmare on Elm Street, which is not a huge surprise when you watch the movie. Like, very clearly made by the same guy. Now, Kim obviously disagrees with me. Maybe. I don't know.
You've provided some evidence here. I'm willing to hear you out. But you're still wrong.
Okay. Before we get into it, like that's just a little tease of how I feel about this movie. Kim, I would like your help putting together three good things for people. Now, this movie's got a reputation. It's kooky, it's wacky, the fact that it's directed by Wes Craven and it's not a household name kind of movie maybe says something about the quality of it to some people. But there's at least three good things about it.
There's some gold in this movie. This movie shines bright intermittently.
Intermittently. Okay.
My first good thing is Massage Chair of Doom. I think that's one of the best. I think that's one of the best moments of the film. We'll talk about it in a bit, I'm sure. Yeah. But a massage chair that seems very not integral to the plot, but is frequently used, becomes a method of mayhem.
Okay. Good thing number two. We have a villain. We have a serial killer who's been unstoppable and has murdered
everything,
countless families. And so they're going to, we're streamlining him right to the electric chair. And he's so evil that
fast tracked.
It's like the same day they bring him to the electric chair. He's so evil that when they zap him, he doesn't die. He just becomes electricity.
That's what I was going to say, is that he's a serial killer. He's a Satanist with magical powers, and then he also just becomes electricity instead of a ghost.
It's the best. Like, when we talk about performers being electric, this is what they mean. Good thing number three, heavy metal soundtrack. Don't you love a goofy, off-the-wall killer movie?
I could have done with a little more heavy metal.
You know what? I changed my mind. That's not even it. Good thing number three is a 7-year-old girl who says fuck a bunch and tries to kill people with a tractor. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, I was so surprised when we first saw her. I did not think she was going to be evil. And I was like, it would be so good if she went evil. And then she did. And I was like,
did.
Wes, you read my mind.
Wes, you're the best.
You've done it again. But not really.
So those are just three good things. We're going to be... Shut up. Shut up right now. That's not the kind of energy we're bringing into this podcast. It kind of sounds like, regardless of whether you think this movie's trash or whether you're hoping somebody out there considers it a trashterpiece, this is the episode for you.
It's somewhere in between trash and trashterpiece. It's not quite trash, but it's not quite a trashterpiece.
And we're going to get to the bottom of it in a minute. We'll be right back.
We are here today to bear witness to the execution of Horace Pinker, whose unspeakable atrocities have horrified the people of this great state. He stands convicted of 52 counts of aggravated assault, 23 counts of armed robbery, and 37 counts of murder in the first degree. Prisoner, have any final words?
Yeah. No more Mr. Nice Guy.
I don't think he's dead.
Content. He's among you!
Now, Wes Craven brings you his greatest creation.
No more!
Shocker.
Wes Craven's unheralded masterpiece, Shocker, is currently sitting at a 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 2.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
That's high.
Yeah. Now, it might also just be that we have decades of filmmaking from Wes Craven to pull from and look back on, because you can't help but watch this movie with as a retrospective. Because it's got everything that Wes Craven's obsessed about, right?
Yeah, and you find that the more we've been going through Wes Craven's deep cuts, you can really see the blueprints of the things he was interested in.
Yeah.
I found that especially when we watched, what was that, like, pilgrimy one? We did it on the podcast.
I keep wanting to say Incubus.
Deadly Blessing. Deadly Blessing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one was, like, so cool to watch in retrospect, because you can see all of those, like, those muscles that he's flexing for the first time, that he really honed in and made some of the most iconic horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
This one is kind of a weird collage of the good and the bad.
The good and the bad. Okay, now, agreed, sure, there are some choices. It's an artistic statement. But yeah, even not even just the fact that we've got a serial killer who sort of like stretches beyond death to continue his rampage.
Kind of like a certain dream demon.
Kind of like a dream demon, yeah. And who also, we have a dream element in this movie.
We do.
We've the opening of the movie is the killer fixing a television in the same way that Freddy is building his glove in the opening of Nightmare on Elm Street, but it even has, like, the ghost of a loved one that really maybe shouldn't be there, kind of like in Scream 3, where Sydney's mom just sort of shows up.
Oh, yeah. And she's all spooky.
Yeah, in this one, we've got the ghost of a girlfriend who, this is maybe the only thing that I think is goofy, where...
She's like, no, I can't go to the light. I have to help my boyfriend, maybe.
Maybe. A love beam shoots out of her to stop Horace Pinker, the villain. Okay, so the villain in this movie is called Horace Pinker, which I think is actually not a bad name.
It's a good name.
I think it's a great name.
And it's, especially, like, he's a TV repairman, like Horace Pinker. I could see Horace on a jumpsuit. I could also see Pinker on the side of a van.
I'll tell you right now, I could see that on our merch store very soon, Kim. I think maybe you should get into, like, a TV repair, like, Pinker's TV repair.
I should start buying mechanic jumpsuits and fixing them up.
If you could, that'd be great.
I mean, there's so many horror villains that would work for.
the other thing, talking about jumpsuits, there's tons of jumpsuits in this movie. He starts with a TV repairman jumpsuit. He ends up in a Death Row jumpsuit, which is just a cool look. For a villain, he's got that orange jumpsuit with the black and white checkered stripes across the center of it.
Does he wear that the rest of the movie?
He wears
like
that
when he's the ghost
of the movie.
I mean, is he a ghost? This is confusing.
that's up for debate.
Because he does deflate after being electrocuted.
Yeah. Okay. So he's a TV repairman, and
herein lies the problem. Listen to John try to explain the plot of this.
I'm gonna go step by step. I'm gonna make this real easy for you, Kim. Don't worry.
All right. Because Wikipedia did not help.
My favorite part, though, is that the opening credits of the movie, where we're trying to, like, learn a little bit about Horace Pinker, he's not building a weapon. He's just fixing a television. He's like, oh, I gotta get these fucking tubes in here, and I gotta get these wires connected, but
I love that he's been a lifelong serial killer, from what we learn later on, but he still holds a daytime job. He's still an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I guess you don't think maybe he killed... Well, I guess it is the Pinker name. There definitely exists a world maybe where he killed a guy and took over his business. But yeah, he's filing taxes, I assume. He's clearly getting calls.
Yeah, and I think it's like we've tuned in right at the point he's... Thank you. He's become unhinged. Like, he's crossed... business and pleasure because he's killing Jonathan's family with the van out front. Serial killer mistake.
I don't think he's ever given a fuck. I think he's
I think he's just... He's unhinged. This is him. He is cracked. He's gone too far.
This is him in berserker mode. Okay. You think that he's really taken painstaking efforts until now to hide his tracks?
I don't think there were any painstaking efforts for anything, but yeah.
Okay, so he's not building the weapon at the beginning. He's fixing the TV. The TV comes on in enough time for us to learn that he is the kind of serial killer who just shows up and murders an entire fucking family. Writes, like, messages on the wall in their blood. He's a real nuisance.
nuisance.
In the community, yeah. They're like, we gotta do something about this serial murderer. He's killed countless families at this point. Including Heather Langenkamp in, like, a quick little cameo, because Wes is the best. And for some reason, there's a football quarterback
who's distracted by girls.
Well, he's a high school quarterback.
He's so clumsy in the beginning of the movie that it is a stretch to believe he's going to be our hero, our kung fu hero the rest of the movie.
Don't say it like that. Look, he's the hero. He's not the
hero
we deserve.
He's the karate dream kid.
He's having dreams about Horace Pinker. He's literally, man, he's not just seeing the murders happen. He's actually there.
That was really confusing to me because I wasn't sure for the first two dreams if Horace could actually, like, see him. I know he was interacting with him in the dreams, but I thought maybe they were like shows because this is a TV thing. Like, I thought... They were
he's the live
replays.
Audience. Wow, you're making this better for me.
Yeah, so they were replays so that, like, he was watching Horace commit these murders, but Horace couldn't see, you know what I mean? Like Horace wasn't aware that Jonathan was on to him. Yeah. Horace couldn't see the TV audience.
No, but he's literally interacting with this kid in the moment. And he's also not surprised to see him.
No.
He's like, oh, hey, man, nice to see you. You want to see something fucked up? You want to see something fun? Like, it's he is playing to a live audience in that moment. I love that. But it's very strange.
It is so strange.
Super strange.
And also, so they, like, dive into each other a lot. And then we're wake up.
That's just good filmmaking, you know? So he's astral projecting into these crime scenes, and he's seeing them happen, and he's explaining it to his girlfriend and his father, who's a cop. P.S. He's adopted. He's a foster kid. All of his siblings, before they were murdered by Horace Pinker, were also foster children. It seems like the detective and his wife couldn't have kids, so they just fostered a bunch. And, which, honestly, great character. A detective who just, like, takes in kids from, like, bad situations. Love that guy.
That's great. That's how when you hear, you know, like, a fire department rescues, like, a dog that has no parents, and then it just becomes the firehouse dog, and you're like, this was his destiny.
Is that how it happens?
I think so.
That's how we like.
Unless it's a Dalmatian,
happens.
I think they get those.
You can't just...
Those are appointed by the city. Like the annual Christmas tree lighting. They're like, the Dalmatian of the city.
The lighting of the Dalmatian, yeah. So,
and everybody gathers for the coloring of the Dalmatian.
I like
his
that.
His own little fire hydrant, they cut a ribbon.
What Kim's trying to say is that at some point, this teenager has his entire family murdered. Well, his mother and his siblings. And he sees it in graphic detail. Like, so much so that it's unnerving to his dad when he describes how the fingers are broken. Like, he sees the whole murder take place.
So this is not plot imperative, but you are not describing the fact that he met his dad at a seedy downtown bar to have this conversation.
And it was after the funeral!
But this is, like, before we're completely solidified on the characters and the circumstance, and we're just in a scene with a kid that we know is in high school, just hanging out with his bar dad, and then his dad's like, shut up, and drops some money on the counter and walks out. Like, this is his ex-partner who was fired for drinking on the job, and he's like, you can't talk to me about these cases anymore.
They have a special relationship. Like, he calls him Donnie instead of Dad.
I just thought the captions were wrong for a lot of the film.
But here's what you're complaining about. Efficient filmmaking. You're saying...
Efficient filmmaking?
Okay, I'm being a little silly here.
I'm not even going to respond to that.
It's unclear whether or not Horace knows exactly who this kid is. Like, clearly he stumbled in on a crime that Horace was committing, and then I guess he recognized the identity immediately and then found his family and killed them intentionally. He didn't just happen upon them. It wasn't an accident.
That is a leap. Okay, keep going.
And this kid, whose name I can't remember, is it Mark?
Jonathan?
It's Jonathan.
It's your own name.
How could I not remember? So Jonathan keeps having these dreams. He's, man, you know.
And then what happens, John? How do they catch him?
He enrolls the help of his high school football buddy. Real Nightmare on Elm Street style. Like,
and
hey, man,
Ted Raimi.
You got to. And Ted Raimi, who's.
For some scenes.
Nickname is Pac-Man in this movie. He's like the towel boy for the football team. It's a real sort of Simpsons style Nightmare on Elm Street moment where it's like, hey, man, you got to watch me while I sleep. You got to make sure I'm okay. And then, you know, if I start screaming, you wake me up so I don't accidentally get murdered while I'm astral projecting.
Stupid Glenn.
We find out the location of the murder, and then we zip over there and stop him.
Instead of getting his dad, the
Instead
police
of calling
officer,
the cops.
Who he's got a direct line to.
Yeah, he's got 1 degree of separation away from the head of the police.
But the thing is, his dad kind of believes him now because of how, like, creepy his ability to recount the crime scene was. So the cops are secretly tailing him anyway.
They think that he's the murderer.
And they show up, but then there's this, like, long extended moment where everybody's just standing in the street, even though we all know there's a murder happening in
the
apartment above. And then they all run up, and you're just like, okay, do you believe him or do you not believe him? And then it's just like, to him, to Jonathan, do you believe your dreams or do you not? Like, get the fuck up there.
Okay, so I take back everything I said about efficient filmmaking, because this is where the movie actually starts. Like, we're half an hour into our discussion. The movie has just begun.
I thought it started when Horace Pinker got executed.
This is where we arrest Horace Pinker, and then zip, bam, boom, we're at the execution day.
Yeah,
it's Friday.
He bought that Disney Genie pass for Magic Kingdom to, like, you know, no appeals, straight to the electric chair.
There's no discussion about it. We're not.
He didn't even have to shave his head in between being arrested and getting the electric chair.
This guy's been looking forward to this day. He
He's stoked. He loves electricity. It's his favorite thing.
Now, this is the only real roadblock of the movie.
The Satanism?
Exactly. Is it satanic? Who knows?
There were candles and runes or whatever on the floor. Okay, this is my favorite thing about the Satanism, though. The Satanism is also tied to electricity. TV in his room is part of the spell, John! It's TV magic!
I like to pretend it's black magic or voodoo more than Satanism, just because it sounds cooler to say.
With a TV!
With a TV. V, baby. Isn't it great? Somehow, Horace Pinker has gotten his hands on jumper cables.
And they're jumper cables?
Yeah. Now, it's prison. You can get anything in prison.
The fact that he had candles was the biggest leap of all.
You could, you're like, jumper cables, sure, but candles? How? He doesn't have anybody to smuggle this in for him. And he's enough of a badass that I highly doubt anybody's doing him favors. But when they come to get him to take him to the electric chair, he's stripped the TV apart. He's got jumper cables attached to it. There's candles and runes and stuff drawn on the floor. And he's electrocuting himself, but he's talking to the TV like it's a god. Also similar to Nightmare on Elm Street 3, where the TV's up top doing funky stuff.
Doing funky things.
It's prime time, bitch, and this guy is about to conquer death. I don't know how. If only, maybe, in that opening scene, we saw him... We just needed a scene of him looking through an old book of black magic and doing weird spells with the television. You know, we needed some sort of foundation for this guy's trying to do black magic with electricity and TVs.
Or even just a scene, like, we're in his lair at one point, and he's got so many TVs stacked up, and it's just, like, a really cool setting.
Yeah.
If we just had him walk by and all the TVs turned on following him.
Something.
Like, he's got some kind of metaphysical connection to the TVs.
Yeah.
I'm a TV repairman, black magic. Figure it out.
Right. So that's maybe my only complaint, is that I have to think it's somewhere.
I'm
gonna
hold you to this being your only complaint.
Well, okay, fine. We'll see how it goes. I just have to believe that somewhere on the cutting room floor, somewhere in how it was edited and put together, and like how much of a nightmare post production seemed to be, that there were answers for those questions. That there were a little more, I guess, rules on how Horace Pinker works and his powers that we're just not seeing here.
So you're giving the film credit for the things you didn't see on the screen.
I think we should always give credit for vision. there is a vision that Wes really tried to seek out, and it's just, you know, sometimes it doesn't always work. Now, clearly, people were not as receptive to this movie as I'd hoped, you know, and that's the movie's fault at the end of the day. It was not a huge success. A lot of people went, the fuck? You know, walking out of this theater, they weren't like, you gotta see this. They were like, you really shouldn't see this. It doesn't seem like there was a word of mouth campaign afterward, which bums me out. I grew up obsessed with the trailer of this movie. I would see it ahead of tons of movies that I owned on VHS, and I was just like, one day when I'm big, I'm gonna watch that shocker. It's gonna be the greatest movie I've ever seen. And it was almost that.
The trailer was kind of fantastic.
Oh my God, right? No more Mr. Nice Guy. They flip the switch, he gets fried, and then he turns into fucking, like, evil electricity?
That's the thing about this movie. Okay. It is 4 excruciating hours of cinema. But there are so many good moments that if you cut them, if you accordion the whole thing and you just do the scenes, and it still makes no sense, but it's just bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much good shit in this. It's just excruciating getting to each one because there are so many piss poor decisions and lacks of decisions, people running to places and then just standing there for 10 minutes and then something cool
happens. What Kim is describing is a movie that gives you time to go back to the concession stand, get another beer, and not miss anything. I think this is a perfect movie. You don't have to hit pause on it, just make sure you're back in time for Horace Pinker to start body jumping from person to person and doing all kinds of fucking shenanigans. There are no big rules that explain how this shit works, but after he's electrocuted, he escapes his own body. You know, his body deflates like it's just a pile of skin, no bones, and he just hops into people wherever it's convenient. Doesn't seem like it's an issue if he kills that person while he's inside that body. He just like rises up out of it. Goes into the fucking plug outlet in the wall, comes out in somebody else's body. There's a fight on top of a television tower, and you know, oh, we've got him cornered now. Where's he gonna go? Apparently, nationwide. He hits one of the TV antennas, and now he's in every home in America.
Yep.
I love some of the decisions in this movie. I don't necessarily understand what it's trying to say about TV, you know? Because even in the beginning, we're watching, like, when Jonathan meets up with his girlfriend, she is working at a sort of, like, hot dog stand on campus.
What? I don't even remember that.
He's like, give me my soda. And he's like, why are you always watching that news junk? Because she's complaining that the news is just like full of murder and mayhem and it's gross and disgusting. He's like, if you don't like it, you just gotta change the channel.
Isn't this after his family was brutally murdered or is this before?
I don't think he knows that his family... Oh, you mean like his new family. No, this is before. This is literally...
his second family, not the first family.
I mean, we're also glossing over the fact that at his execution, Horace Pinker reveals that he is the biological father of Jonathan.
They give him a lot of time to talk.
And then his one tell, how you know Horace Pinker is in somebody's body, is that he's got a limp leg. Because as a child...
Because limps occur in the brain.
Yes. As a child, Jonathan tried to stop Horace from abusing his mother, shot him in the leg, gave him a permanent limp, and that was how the police got called, and he got taken away into custody, into children's services, child services, and got fostered by this detective.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's how we explain the psychic connection between Horace Pinker and Jonathan. Like, I don't know.
All of a sudden psychic connection.
You know,
one murder before the murder of his family.
The voodoo's in the genes, baby. You know, like, it's somehow because Horace Pinker has tapped into something ethereal that it also passes down to his son as well. Like, there's some sort of connection.
Okay, so this ability is new. Maybe the Satanism is new. The TV black magic is a new addition.
To Horace Pinker's toolkit or to the world? Are you trying to say that this is a new thing? Like, we're
well,
we're
I feel like Horace Pinker is,
a little bit?
Is, you know... the first and only person to harness the TV powers. But yeah, like maybe he's just gotten into it. Like he's just passed.
Oh yeah, no, I think it's relatively new.
And that's maybe what's unlocked the shit with his son. Like, oh, TV power now exists? Well, it's in your blood now and your blood is Jonathan?
What?
Question mark? I don't know.
Okay, so after... I don't have answers for that. After the execution and, like, the chaos that ensues with him being, like, fucking fried and not going well and falling out of the chair and disappearing, basically, he jumps into one of the attendants, I think the physician that's looking over the execution. She kills some cops by crashing the car. He jumps into one of the cops. He chases Jonathan in the park because Jonathan knows something's up.
Oh, the extended park sequence. That was 1 hour in and of itself.
Surprisingly long sequence.
Why do we just stay at the park?
But worth it. Like, that's where we get the 7-year-old girl. Like, he jumps from the police officer into... He jumps into the police officer into the girl, right? He doesn't jump into the runner? Like, he just shoots the runner with
his
gun?
No, he jumps into the runner, but he's only in the runner briefly, and then he's in the girl. Then there's this crazy scene where it's Jonathan, the possessed little girl, and then the mom of the little girl...
Chasing after them?
Chasing each other like a rom-com. It's literally like the sequence in Monkey Bone when dead Corky Romano is just, like, running through the city and everyone is chasing him. It is just... Bonkers.
Oh, I love that we're not even using his real name. We're just calling him Corky Romano.
I don't know what his real name is.
Chris Kattan.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I love it. And, you know, he obviously he gets away. He
at some point his girlfriend is murdered, too. Maybe we should
glossed over that. Yeah. So before Horace is caught.
You're doing a great job synopsizing this film.
It weaves a web. I could not do a better job sitting here trying to describe what Eraserhead is about.
We watched this movie like 6 hours ago.
I'm just saying, some movies resonate on an emotional level, and they just feel right. Trying to explain it makes it hard, you know. It's not they don't work in a standard narrative structure. It's just a movie you gotta vibe with.
Okay,
it's vibrating on a specific frequency. Some
all right, just get back to it.
Anyway, yeah, so Horace kills this guy's girlfriend. It's real brutal. He writes on the walls, and at some point, she becomes surprising. Very surprising.
I was like, whoa, we're killing the girlfriend? She had main character energy, and then I realized she was going to be a ghost throughout the
movie. She was going to be a ghost throughout the rest of this.
With a magical necklace with some abilities unexplained.
I don't quite understand the necklace also. And the necklace, the necklace is very important. And it has some sort of key to fighting Horace. Like, he becomes very weak. It's a
he can't
talisman.
Look at it. Yeah, he can't look at it like a vampire at a cross.
I guess it's like a mother's love, like, but how it, that can always banish a demon no matter what.
But it also helps him, like, go into the TV world. Like, it's got a lot of magical ambiguous ability.
I think maybe it's a love and hate relationship, and both emotions are equally as strong, but it's about how you use them and what you use them for. Horace, obviously, his magic, I think, comes from the death and destruction. You know, like, he's tapping into a dark energy, and Jonathan is tapping into white magic, a love energy that is, you know, it's like Monsters, Inc., baby. You know, screams, they're powerful, but laughs, 10 times better.
Okay.
Yeah. That was awful. But,
I'm eye-rolling into oblivion.
Yeah. So Horace in the park grabs the necklace, throws it into the water. And
oh my god! And then we get an extended sequence where we need diving goggles in order to get the necklace out of the lake because it's the only thing that will defeat Horace. But I can't go back and get the goggles. You must go get the goggles. Well, I wait here until dark.
The last time he was there, he saw his dead girlfriend. He just doesn't want to go back there anymore. It's too
much. He goes back
much.
There a lot.
He goes back there after he has to. He's got to confront those fears.
Stop trying to justify the goggles. Sequence. The extended goggle chapter. If we watched this on DVD and had to go back, it'd be like, must get the goggles, didn't get the goggles, oh, the goggles are broken,
yes.
3 chapters. And then he gets the necklace without the goggles!
The goggles weren't important, Kim. He had to...
He had the goggles inside him all along,
yeah. It was the love that he had
for the goggles along the way.
That's the compass he had to use to find the necklace. Now, I don't like that sequence either. He goes back to the water. He's like, God damn it. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to find him for reasons. He dives into the water several times, and it isn't until, like, his ghost girlfriend shows up in a super creepy way.
Favorite moment of the movie.
Yeah. She pops up out of the water. And
they
she's
propel
like,
her like she's on a fucking skidoo.
Yeah. It's like Jennifer's Body, where Jennifer's just like floating across the pool. Like, it looks creepy as fuck.
It is on the same level as the creepy old lady ghost in 13 Ghosts. Like, when she rolls through with the candle. Or is that House on Haunted Hill? Whatever. It's the best scare ever. And this, almost on par with that.
It's amazing.
So good.
Another great Wes Craven moment in water. Like, that's just like, we had a snake in the tub in Deadly Blessing. We had an endless tub that Nancy gets yanked into in Nightmare on Elm Street. And we got this pretty good sequence. Propelling ghost girlfriend. It's a great image. It's not a great scene, unfortunately.
It's so good. When we saw the trailer, it's what made me want to actually watch this movie.
Not the electricity guy?
Not Horace Baker. No, I was like, whatever.
Not fucking, I don't know his name. Not Skinner from The X-Files being a fucking sadistic serial killer, man.
I didn't know it was Skinner.
So his face is embedded as like, a real calm, collected voice of reason from that show. And to see him absolutely unhinged in this is so much fun. Now, obviously, this came out before The X-Files.
It's like when you saw Titanic before Demon Knight and you were like, holy shit.
Oh, you know, it took me a half a second to realize what you were getting at. But yes, absolutely. You know, I probably saw Demon Knight before Titanic. I saw Demon Knight the moment it came on VHS. I rented that fucker every week.
Well, some of us didn't have a TV movie child.
Some of us didn't have that cool video store hookup, yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, this is where some of the...
This is where?
This is where the movie gets wet and wild. Like, this is where it gets weird. This is where we've got a lot of decisions, most of them great. Some of them probably compromises, okay? We've got two camps. We've got Jonathan set up back at the house. He's got a local TV station news anchor there who's going to help him trap Horace Pinker across town.
And we're given no information how and or
no,
why.
No, he's just like, you just gotta fucking trust me, bro.
At the specific moment, even though I'm gonna do a lot of non-efficient things between now and then, and it's kind of a crapshoot whether I'll make it here on time.
Don't you love imagining that whole scenario from the news anchor's perspective, though? Like, okay, so I've got my cameras here. This kid's promising me that he's gonna get me the serial killer responsible for all these deaths, even though everybody in the town thinks Jonathan is the serial killer at this point.
They think it's a copycat, and that it's Jonathan.
Now, he's promising that he's going to get them the man responsible for these slayings. And he doesn't tell them how, and they really don't want to commit to this, but also, this would get them like a Pulitzer Prize. Like, this is gonna change your entire career. And then he's like, all right, I'm gonna go get him for you. And then he goes to bed. Like, that's if you're the news crew, that's what you're seeing. Like, don't worry, guys, I'm gonna get this fucking guy for you. I'm just gonna have a quick little snooze.
Yeah, first. And he goes on a full date with his girlfriend.
One last time, right?
It's because they made a specific point to reference that they were both virgins at the beginning of the movie. So I think what we had was finally consummating their relationship in afterlife / dream world.
Where he's an astral projected ghost and she's an afterlife ghost?
Yes. So. While all of the dead family and friends watch on from down the field.
It's hot. Across town, also, we've got like the rest of the football crew that are breaking into the power grid for the entire town.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't necessarily know it at this point, but the plan is that Jonathan is going to trap Horace in the TV world and then cut the power to the city, which would effectively, he thinks, kill him. There's no proof that that's true. It seems at every turn, this guy's completely unstoppable. He can just disappear into the electric grid. I guess I just don't know how electric grids work, you know? Like, maybe I would expect that he could just disperse and go somewhere else.
Couldn't
completely.
He just go into a battery?
Now you're talking sequel territory, baby. This is how we bring it back. He's in a Tesla now.
Where he goes in a solar panel, and then you're like, we're fucked now.
Yeah, that's how we could have revitalized this franchise. 5 or 6 sequels in, we go solar power, just like, oh shit, Pinker's gone green. Okay, so this is where we get some of the best imagery of the movie, but also some of the goofiest shit imaginable. Jonathan has gone into his dream so he can fight Horace Pinker in person. They've gone into television by
jumping
through it. Is
he sleeping while that's happening?
He's sleeping while all this is happening, but also maybe possibly not there. I don't quite know how it works. It's like he is 100% gone to sleep, but then at some point at the end of the movie, like, it's his physical body that's jumping out of the camera. Now, so we're in the TV world. The image of him climbing in and out of TVs and diving into TVs is truly wonderful.
It's fantastic. They do a great job of all of the weird TV rendering of Horace Pinker and Jonathan as well, going in and out of the TVs, but it's especially because of Horace Pinker because he's semi-translucent. So you know there's kind of like, there's got to be double shots of everything, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
And able to do that. And they've got these really cool, like, rendered TV sets where actors are physically jumping in and out of them.
Yeah, the rules of it are just fun. Like, that's what you get. It's just
the rules fun. Are non-existent.
No, because they're going into sequences, like they're going into like stock footage of bombs being dropped in Vietnam. We're jumping into, like, you know,
I Love Lucy,
and an actual news broadcast
that's
where
being like recorded live, talking about them being able to be seen on TV. So fucking meta.
And then they drop onto the table and they're fighting on top of the table and the news anchor's like, holy shit, they're here with us now! And then they disappear into another spot, which I don't quite fully understand.
So they go to the sets or they go, are they in
right.
the...
Exactly. Are they physically traveling to the sets? I don't know.
Like, is this time travel? What is happening? Because they interact with Frankenstein.
It's great. Love that shit?
It is great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's worth the goofiness of the rest of it. Now, they wind up back in his house, and right when Pinker is about to stab Jonathan grabs the remote and hits pause. And it stops Horace Pinker, and he's like, he can't move.
And then all of a sudden, it's a fucking Wii remote.
And then it's a Wii remote. Now, that's a choice where he can pick him up and he can throw him across the TV because it's like the infrared beams like got a hold of him. I don't necessarily love that.
Even saying the infrared beam has got a hold of him is too much description for what's happening here.
Well, it is what's happening, man. It would have been way better if, now this maybe would have been the cheesy ending where he just hits rewind and then like his girlfriend comes back because Horace Pinker gets rewound and like everything that he did doesn't happen anymore. That seems
like click.
Like, click, or, like, Nancy saying, like, I take back all the power I gave you, yada yada. We could have, I guess Wes was just like, oh, shit, I think I'm writing the same movie. Maybe I shouldn't do that. But he basically locks him in the television world, and then before Pinker has a chance to attack him, he puts the necklace on top of the camera lens from the camera crew, and Jonathan dives through the camera
to get out
back
of the TV
into the real world
before the power goes out.
Now, I don't mind that that's the portal to get back to the real world because it's the camera is what's creating the TV world. Like, that kind of makes sense. Don't give me that look. I see it. People can hear that look you're giving me right now.
I was just closing my eyes and trying to follow the thread.
Kim's trying to not be here right now. She's like, how do I astral project out of here into the bath? Oh, that'd be nice. Ooh, a little duck. It's so calm in here. And that's essentially the end of the movie. He jumps out just in time. We kill the power grid and Horace is gone forever.
When does the evil chair come? When is the girlfriend like, I have to tell you something? She never does. And
no, she
when is she
something.
Used the beam of love?
So that,
when are all these? Are these in the TV?
No,
are they
so
in the
those,
real world?
So that's my fault. I did jump over that. That's in season 3 of the movie where we go back to his apartment when the coach never shows up.
Oh yeah, because the coach gets possessed and kills himself.
Yes, the coach gets possessed. He kills Ted Raimi off screen.
In the closet.
In the closet.
With the goggles.
He busts the goggles. That's also where the coach kills himself. There's a bit of a back and forth. Like,
I love when he talks to his dad in the other room, doesn't say anything about the corpses in his bedroom.
Yeah.
And he's like, gotta get Horace Pinker, dad. And he's like, I have to arrest you, son.
Yeah, there are bodies here right now. Yeah, he starts to think that his son is the one responsible for killing his own family, even, is what he's thinking. But okay, so, but
is he?
In that, yes, 100%.
But Horace Pinker was alive at that point.
Yeah, but he's like, it was really weird how you knew how your brother's fingers were broken. I think you did this.
Oh, yeah.
Also, maybe he's just starting to think that it's part of It's in the blood. There's something bad with this kid. He's the son of Horace Pinker. He's just like Horace Pinker. Also, that's where we find that the dad's possessed by Horace Pinker. Let's not forget that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, before dad shows up, he sits down on a chair like, oh, man, what an exhausting day watching everybody I love get murdered
massage.
In front of me. And then the massage chair, the arms of the massage chair come up and grab him and put him in a bear hug. And then it stands up and it slowly morphs into Horace Pinker.
I love when the massage chair has blinking eyes.
It has fucking eyeballs that blink! Oh, like the buttons become eyes.
Very Freddy Krueger, I will say. That is a page.
That's a total Freddy.
Freddy
Krueger
would
move.
Totally
yeah.
massage chair.
Yeah. So yeah, because the massage chair is electric, Horace Pinker is able to jump into it, which is the other kind of problem of this movie. Like, is he able to possess the electric world? Is he able to possess things that are electric? Maybe.
Yeah, why wasn't he even Evil Blender? I would have loved that.
Yeah, he's like, hey man, put your hand in here. It'll be great. I guess the argument there is that he's able to possess bodies because of the electrical synapses, like the firing of our synapses in our brains.
Stop using science here. This is no place for science.
He's 10 years ahead of the Matrix, man. Like, humans are just batteries. You know, like, that's how Horace Pinker's able to get in. Now, it doesn't necessarily make sense that when he leaves people, they also deflate. I don't get that. But
they deflate?
He uses up their energy. Like, they just die. So they don't all deflate, but they just, like, die of weird natural causes.
So the
causes.
Little girl died?
The little girl's probably dead, yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, he's killed whole families. It's no big deal. He's killing kids across the board in this movie.
Mm.
And yeah, I have a lot of questions. I don't necessarily know how it works. It could have all been smoothed out in part two and part three.
You didn't explain the power of love moment. When does that occur?
It's the most powerful force on Earth, Kim.
I said when, not what.
Benny, it's imbued in the necklace. Like, that's his own white magic. That's the his
no,
own
No, I was
talisman.
Talking about the love beam.
That was after the chair. So, like, or maybe before the chair. It's after the coach gets killed and the coach is coming after him.
Is she in the TV?
No, she exists on the ghost plane, Kim. God, this is so easy to follow. How do you get lost in this? Horace Pinker comes out of the coach, and then when he's trying to attack the kid, because I guess he's going to try and jump into Jonathan, that's where she's like, not on my watch, Horace Pinker. Love. Like a Care Bear. Like literally like a fucking love beam shoots out of her chest,
like
bends
bear.
Around a corner, and
I
kicks him out.
I loved when it bended.
Yeah, that was fun.
Because you're like, whoa, it's not light, it's ghost powers.
That's also where he's like, oh, there's only one way out of here. I'm going to stick my fingers in this plug outlet. But it's not just easy enough to put my ghost fingers in the plug outlet. I got to stretch my fingers impossibly long and turn them into a fork and then go.
Yeah,
into
but
the
you know you
outlet.
Were like, yeah.
Yeah. I know I was like, yeah, because I
fuck
out loud
yeah.
watching that movie said, fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, prong fingers. Fuck yeah.
10 out of 10. This movie's great.
No, see, we agree on all the same good points, like prong fingers, massage chair, ghost girlfriend, rowboat.
Yeah,
I can't remember what we called her.
Yeah, no, it's all
and
fun.
The rest.
And the rest. Him, like, honestly, the image of him jumping, not even jumping, just like stepping out of the television, is just, you know, tattooed on my brain. Like, I have watched it 1,000 times in trailers, and maybe it was just like my child brain trying to like figure out what the rest of the movie was gonna be, but I was like, that is pure cinema, you know, like that's horror, that's what I want. Like, I definitely think of that moment constantly, just like bored at work eating a sandwich during lunch going like, man, it's pretty fucking cool when he steps out of that TV. That's guaranteed a thought that I've had within the last calendar year. I haven't seen this movie, it's like 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And
another thing.
I guess
remember when his foster dad pretended to have a heart attack to get Horace Pinker out of his body because he didn't want him there, but he wasn't strong enough to, like, will him out? And then Horace Pinker was like, I'm going to go into satellite dish because this heart's no good.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, because he's like, because Jonathan was like, yeah. I didn't know you had a bad heart.
Yeah,
and he was like,
I don't. But Horace didn't know that. Oh, Wes. Man, don't you love it when artists are given creative control?
It's just...
This is the kind of shit they come up with.
See, and that's what I was saying at the beginning, is there was just too much creative
so
control.
So, let me ask you a real quick question, then. Could AI write this movie?
Yes.
No!
It makes no sense.
AI would make something that makes sense. AI.
No, it wouldn't. Not yet. Nah. It would just be like scene, kind of like this movie.
AI would know the structure of a movie.
And the necklace is the power of love. Continue.
Okay, well then, you know what? I take it all back. Replace the screenwriters with robots, guys.
You shut your mouth.
I want more movies like Shocker. Like, this movie takes risks, it takes challenges, it's not perfect. I really do think it could have been a lot better. I'm sure even Wes was just like, fuck, we've kind of fucked this a little bit.
I think he knew the risks involved in, like, it becoming a franchise, and he had so much he wanted to do with this character. I think he did it all in this film.
You think he tried too hard with the first movie?
Yeah, I think there's just way too much. Like, yeah. The entire second half of the film where they're going through the TV and they're fighting through the TV stuff, like, that's second season shit. We should have just kind of done the origin story. We should have gone, like, it maybe should have been a slower burn where we see him evil as a serial killer first, or we could do that as a prequel later.
I would probably just get rid of the girlfriend stuff, like the necklace and the ghost girlfriend.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that, without question, that's gotta go. No, like, them jumping into television and, like, fighting through the television is great, and, like, surely there's some sort of
but comment, like, the
that
Jason
about that.
The Jason goes to hell body swapping,
yeah,
like, that's that's enough in and of itself, but then we're also doing, like, TV weird ethereal plane stuff. Like, there's so many planes in this movie.
You're not wrong, because, like, the him possessing a chair and the chair having eyeballs and stuff, that's a part four move. Like, that's when we start getting real crazy. But, you know, you can't tell me that the best Friday the 13th is the first Friday the 13th. And the-
have you seen my ranking?
Yeah, Jason X is number one.
Okay, but that's...
Okay, but that...
But that's for controversy.
I'm pretty sure Freddy vs. Jason is number two.
That's also for controversy.
None of these movies are the first thing.
And I was ranking them by funnest. If I was ranking by best, Friday the 13th Part 1 would be there.
If you ask real Halloween fans, there's a pretty good chance that that Halloween 1 might not be their favorite. Same goes for Nightmare on Elm Street or the Purge movies. Like, I think as far as franchises go, it's not uncommon for the first movie to not necessarily be the best one.
Yeah, but I don't think that statement is true for this podcast. What's your favorite Purge?
The second Purge.
You're wrong. What's your favorite Halloween movie?
It's Halloween number one. But I'm not the guy to ask, because my second favorite Halloween movie is Halloween Resurrection.
My second favorite Halloween movie is none of them.
But, like, I really do wish we had 8 direct-to-video sequels of this movie. Now, like, sure, it would have been awesome for them to go to the theater, but, like, direct-to-video in the 90s is exactly where this movie could have thrived. And, like, you know, perhaps some of, like,
is a made-for-TV movie? Blow my mind.
Yo, this should have been a made-for-TV movie just based on the content alone. But, yeah. Like,
it would have taken up a whole day of prime time, though, because it's a 6-hour movie.
Yes.
As a 12-hour movie, too much for TV.
Okay, well, anyway.
As a 16-hour film. Maybe a box set.
Part of my appreciation for it is probably the promise that it shows. Like, when you, like, I'm looking at this, imagining what 10 more movies could have been like, and I get it. It's not a perfect movie. I have a fucking blast when I'm watching it, and I am raising my eyebrows just as much as you are.
Fell asleep a couple times.
Shut the fuck up. I fell asleep. This proof positive. I fall asleep during movies I love. It's just how I'm made. I can't help it. I'm not narcoleptic. I'm just tired.
It happened so much when we were younger that we had to send him to the doctor to make sure he was okay.
I was just working too hard and not getting enough sleep and partying too hard on the weekends. It's just who I am, okay? I just have a hard time staying awake, you know? It's sensory overload. That's what I'm leaning on. That's what I'm doing now. Yeah, I hear it's not uncommon.
Oh, it was too much? It was too much fun for you.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, you know what? We need to have a little nap, process what we've taken in. We'll come back for part two later, for season two later. You know, I hear it's not uncommon for people to fall asleep at the opera because it's just too much.
It's just too...
It's not that it's boring. It's not that it's boring. And it's dark. And you're in a comfy seat. It's just that it's a sensory overload. And it's really, really calming.
And because you can understand the language.
That's it. That's the other thing. Yeah. 3.5 out of 4.
Okay.
Yeah. That's exactly how I feel about Shocker. It's a blast. I'd watch it again right now. And I also will never have more answers. Truly, the movie doesn't necessarily make sense, but I have a great time watching it. I'll say this, Maximum Overdrive by Stephen King makes more sense than Shocker, but equally as fun.
So some of this movie is insufferable. I don't like the protagonist. I'm sorry.
Oh, the protagonist. Sorry. Ooh, that was tough for a second.
His voice is just grating to my soul.
Yeah, he's a teenage boy.
It's 18 hours long, but
17 and a half of them great.
The fucking massage chair sequence and the ghost boat girlfriend are worth at least 2 stars on their own. So I'm going to give it a 2 out of 4.
Wow! Oh, I thought it was promising there. I was like, wow, we might get to 3 stars on this one. It's pretty good. I mean, it's got a 2-star bump. Fuck. 2? Just 2. Not even 2.5.
No.
Okay.
They didn't even use fucking Alice Cooper's rendition of whatever song that was that they played.
No, we got a kick-ass Megadeth version.
Although we did run through an Alice Cooper concert at some point in the TV.
Don't you love it?
I don't understand.
Because, I can tell you exactly why. Because the production company that made this movie, which also made John Carpenter's They Live and Prince of Darkness, featuring Alice Cooper, was created by Alice Cooper's former manager. Like, he started a production company for movies.
It makes sense why he did also, like, just movie theme songs as well.
yeah, totally. And it's the guy, you know, the guy that spearheaded this production company, his purpose, his goal was to give these directors creative freedom. It's how we got weird movies like Prince of Darkness, They Live, and Shocker. And, you know, Netflix was doing the exact same thing when they first started, A24 as well. Creative freedom.
Both a blessing and a curse.
Exactly. You know, it's bursting with ideas. Some of them incredible. Some of them less incredible. But, oh, what a movie it made.
If you think of creative genius, like in this case, a master of horror. Think of them like water. They need a container. They need a jar. They need a bowl. They need something to just keep them within the constraints of a 2-hour movie. Just so that they make sense. They need limits. They need edges. Why aren't you laughing? It was a funny analogy, I thought.
Okay, well, anyway, that's what we thought of Shocker. One of us loved it. One of us really loved it. Let us know what you thought of Wes Craven's Shocker. Yeah, it takes a lot of choices. It gets really fucking weird. But, like, don't you wish more movies were
22 hours long?
Hey, I gotta tell you, just based on, like, everything Mike Flanagan's making, most movies are 24 hours long now. Let us know what you thought of Shocker. Hit us up on social media or in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord.
If you want even more Nightmare on Film Street content, consider supporting us by going to Patreon at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. There are tons of bonus episodes and even seasons of episodes to get your fix.
We're going to be back again next week talking about another high-voltage horror from Wes Craven.
From Watts Craven.
From Watts Craven. Yeah, I love that. But until then, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.